Welcome to episode 226 of Come On You Reds, the Toronto FC podcast. Gareth Wheeler, Terry Dunfield with you. I always like stressing the Ohio State. It just sounds more powerful, Terry. Good to have you along for another week. Terry and I have been off the pod for the last few. We had Ollie Curtis join me last week for a little bit of a chat. It was good to catch up with Ollie again. And this week, back down to business. A bunch of games to break down. Some critical fixtures to look ahead to for Toronto FC as well, as we're at the midway point of the season. Where has all the time gone, Terry Dunfield?
Seriously. Having said that, though, it feels like we've had two or three seasons in one with all the international football, the manager changes, Champions League. But I'd say big picture, we've stopped the rot. Five undefeated kind of gave us a nice springboard to move forward. Javier Perez brought it up in his post-game press conference after the Philly game last night that he maybe expected last night. It's difficult to kind of keep that trajectory going. But I'd say the team's in an okay place. But if we're really going to get after the playoffs, we're going to have to find gear soon.
Yeah, we'll kind of break down some of the numbers of where Toronto FC sits right now, what that path towards playoff qualification looks like, because we're going to be honest, it's going to take something special here over the next 17 games for Toronto FC to hit their stride and make the playoffs, back into the MLS Cup playoffs again this year. You said things are moving fast, they're moving quick, not as fast as you on your motorcycle, putting out motorcycle pictures. You badass, you. What's the deal? Like, I know you were going to Ottawa for some Toronto FC Academy do. Did you cruise on the motorcycle to Ottawa, you badass?
Oh, I'm trying to keep the family legacy going. My dad used to ride and
did he
pick it up over COVID. So much fun. After I passed my written test, walked straight into the Harley store. And I'm like, what are you doing in here, man? Get down to Honda. So got a nice Honda Shadow, which is awesome. Really living the moment on the bike because I'm thinking about not dying, which is kind of nice.
But right. Nice. Hold on tight.
Had a couple of days in Ottawa, which was great. One of our six partnership clubs. And I guess they're already in the family, but understood better how we can help them. And looking for the next Johnny David up there.
Very cool. I just want to see you cruise up to the training ground in leather. That would be just leather head to toe. I'll tell you this. Do you know which former TFC player did regularly cruise up to the training ground riding his bike? His motorcycle.
Torsten Frings had a bike over in Germany with the number 22 on the side.
Oh, no, this is a local guy. So Adrian Sirio.
Yeah, we got the long throw.
Yeah, Sirio, when I first started contributing to Goal TV and Toronto FC back in the day, I worked alongside Adrian Sirio, awesome guy, and he would cruise up. We'd be shooting daily content at that time, and he'd just ride up, take off his helmet, and he'd be good to go. And he looked like such a badass. Like all the rest of us media dweebs would be there. Oh, hi, Adrian. Like, you know what I mean? He looks so cool. But I could just envision how cool your academy players think you actually are. Only if they knew the real truth.
Oh, easy. Wasn't his plan B a Hummer as well?
He did have a Hummer. Yeah. Yeah. Not a bad lifestyle right there. Look, let's get down to business. You mentioned it. TFC played two games. Difficult, Terry. Sunday night, Wednesday night away. Is one of those things that kind of get lost in the shuffle. One of those difficult spots where it's a quick turnaround between games. And let's be honest, TFC just simply didn't get off to the races. Alex Bono had to play big, come up big again in the first half, but we didn't have a repeat performance from Chicago. Instead, TFC went down 3-0 in the first half, and that's how things ended in Philly. TFC lose to the Union 3-0. Going to Philly now sucks. Like, I love the stadium. It's way out of the way, but scenic along the river, but the scoreboard hasn't been pretty the last two times. Last October 24th, TFC goes there, gets served 5-0. This time it's 3-0. What did you make of the start of the game and TFC's overall performance on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I thought we came in on paper with pretty good form last night. There was definitely, I think you can see that Javier Perez is trying to keep continuity in this 11 and starting to trust in some players to carry on this momentum and get the job done. Not a ton of turnover. And he's leaning on his senior players a little bit right now. But one thing for sure, when you go to Subaru Park, I've been there, you have to match the energy of Philly, the team, and also that stadium. And they almost suck that ball into the back of the net. And once they kind of pick up a little bit of momentum, they're tough to stop. And you hear that stupid jingle come in when they score. And I actually thought we started quite well. Didn't really hurt Philly. And then gave up another crappy set piece goal.
Yeah.
Two goals kind of back to our old ways at the start of the season. A couple goals we didn't need to concede. We're a little bit open in transition. They play through the heart of us. And at 3-0, it's going to be difficult. And you start to look forward to the next game on the weekend against New York.
Yeah. That's exactly what went through my head. Crappy set piece goal. We've seen too many of them conceded this year. And this is coming from a Manchester United supporter who simply last season, like, couldn't defend set pieces. And it's so difficult when you can't. And oftentimes it's not just about positioning. It's just winning your one-on-one battles. And Gleznis is a big body. You need to know where that guy is. He had a running start, Terry. Like, as a player who's been in the trenches, has been in those difficult areas, you just need to get an elbow out, a body out, make his life difficult so he can't catch it as clean as he did. Like, it's just so difficult for the rest of the team to recover if one player doesn't go about doing their job.
Yeah, and then it ended up being a Chicharito header, the Hernandez one off the
back.
They didn't know a whole bunch about it. No. I agree that we needed a block on the run, and that kind of just deflated us a little bit after a really good start. And I think maybe in the back of the players' minds too, we can see the long throw in against Nashville, another set piece, and you just shoulders start to slump a little bit. And it's a mountain to climb with only a couple days rest between games.
There was lots of commentary on the broadcast as well as just amongst TFC supporters online as well about the formation. I didn't see the formation as being the biggest issue, to be honest with you. It's the exact same formation that they played against Nashville just a couple days before and played that formation pretty well. But I don't care what formation you're playing in, you need to go on and win your individual battles. Like on the second goal, which, you know, came from a penalty, Santos was able to run in. That had less to do about formation than rather than communication, a player just sticking on his man, taking that responsibility and taking that player out of the game. For me, the formation wasn't the issue, Terry. I'm not sure how you look at that.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. You might look at things completely in a different way.
Yeah, kind of. I think when you play with the back three, what it does, it gives you an extra man, obviously, behind the ball. It gives you a little bit more security defensively and also an extra number to build out of the back. But what happened at times is Lawrence dropped quite deep, and it allowed Bedoya, their wide guy in the diamond, to get out to him. And for us to progress past, I guess, their first couple of lines, it needed to be really intricate. And at times we did, but with it being intricate and some nice combination play, that's also a little bit slow at times. And that what that did is it allowed Philly to now recover. So it's almost like we had to beat them twice to create an opportunity because we had so many players behind the ball. And then on the flip side to it, one of the strengths of the system is supposed to be that you get Soteldo and Jozy Altidore man-on-man with their center backs. You can isolate them in a nice 2v2. And we didn't really do that. We didn't get a whole bunch of pressure on the ball at times from our front line as well. And goal two and goal three all came from a turnover. They've got free looks in the middle of the field. We're trying to reorganize. And Philly hurt us in that kind of half space either side of Michael Bradley. And I thought the second goal came from just Oso and Michael trying to find their shape. There's a gap through to the 10. Mavinga comes over. And it's a little bit it's a little bit lucky from Philly. And then their big, strong number 9 takes a big touch out of their feet. And it kind of just entices Alex enough to come. I thought it was a heavy touch from Santos, but it put Alex in a tricky spot, and it's a penalty. And now you're 2-0, and I thought TFC were just clawing their way back into the game. There's a lot of injuries, stop, start, but it actually suited us. I thought the next goal was going to come from us, and they hit us on the counter, and you're like, oh, man.
Well, it was on the counter. Not just that, when the ball was played, and I've tried to stop things and slow things down, it looked offside to me. I know that VAR looks at all these situations, and clearly they had a different angle. But from what we were given, Santos looked like he was a step off.
On the third goal.
Again, they'll have access to more angles than we have just watching the broadcast. But he certainly did look offside.
Yeah, but like, I don't think our back line is playing for offside, if that makes sense. I think in a back three, the last thing you want to do is get a little bit flat, especially when the ball carry has that much time and, you know, one pass beats us and you know Santos is quick. You're not going to catch him once he gets away, and it's a tidy finish from him. And then I just thought after that, we started to focus on New York City. It was good to see Peruzza get some minutes.
Yeah. Let's get into them in a minute, because like there was that glimmer of hope, penalty given right at the start of the second half. And the reason why it's so important to bring up is how many times like this over the course of the last two seasons have we seen Larea taken down in that kind of way? You know, not a whole lot of contact, but enough there. Richie might be looking for it a little bit, but at the same time, it's an absolute foul. We saw this right at the death against Nashville. And it's funny, I did after 90 minutes after that game, I was on completely the other side of the field where we were set up. Yeah. And I didn't have a look of a replay at that time. But after I got home, I checked it out and looked at it. I'm like, how is this not a penalty? Like, this regularly happens to Richie. And I just wonder if he's just not getting enough respect, why that call's not being made on a regular basis. From your perspective, Terry, as a former player, is there something that he's doing that's, you know, planting a seed of doubt, whether it's a penalty in the referee's mind? What do you make of that?
I think when you give a penalty, refs want to be sure. And if there's any kind of like, I don't know, is it that they're going to err on the side of caution and go to VAR? I disagreed with Steve Caldwell. I thought it was a stonewall, or I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, me too.
They get tangled up. What Richie's superpower is that you're almost like, okay, Richie, like, let's see the trick. And normally you see the wide player, he's a protagonist. He's setting up the opposition to exploit space, however it might be, to get to the end line or come inside with maybe a step over or a drag. But what he does, which is interesting, Nick Soelsma used to do it. I don't know if you remember that former TFC player, is he just draws you in. He'll wait, and it's almost like a hesitation. And as soon as that defender comes towards you, his feet are so quick and his acceleration is past you. But what often happens is that dangling leg left in by the center back, that connects with Richie. And maybe the lens that the referee's looking at is Richie's initiating that contact rather than that leg's hanging out there and there's contact, because Richie can't go through that leg. He's not going to get out of the way of that leg. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's
it does. And with all due respect to Soelsma, Richie does it a lot quicker because his steps are that much quicker. It's kind of like a sailboat going around versus a jet ski.
Well, we're going back to Larea now. Not lie anymore.
Well, let's pull back the curtain on this, because I feel like we on our one soccer broadcast.
We want to do what's right by Richie, don't we?
No, 100%. And it just seems like there was a little bit of miscommunication there. This Larea Lai situation. So at the start of the tournament, before game number one, we are sent an audio file by Canada Soccer and CONCACAF of the pronunciations of all the players for all the teams in the tournament. So I'm just, you know, I do my diligence. I know these Canadian players, but I'm listening to the file, and Richie's the last one because he's got the highest number. And I hear Richie Lai, and I'm like, whoa, what? So it caught me by surprise.
That was like, Dunfield, get over here, listen to this.
And I'm like, am I hearing this right? So I reached out to the communications at Canada Soccer. He's like, yeah, that's what he wants to be referred to as. But I couldn't confirm it with Richie or anyone else before the game. So that first game, I threw it out there just that this might be the case. And I was just waiting to make sure. And I reached out to a couple other people in Canada camp. I reached out to Canada Soccer Communications again. And they're like, yeah, this is how he wants to be referred to. So we went with it. Like, I reached out to Richie. I never heard back from him. So then the statement gets released by Richie and he kind of clarifies that, you know, he kind of didn't say things either way. This is the natural pronunciation of the name, but I'm fine with Larea, which, you know, I guess it leaves it open for anyone to call him whatever you want. I'd love a firm answer in fairness, but it sounds like there might've been some miscommunication, between parties here where Richie was answering what his name was pronounced like in Ghanaian. And so what was on tape and what was released to the media might've not been what he actually wanted. So, I mean, that it's still up to debate a little bit, but certainly we have the audio of him saying his name that way. We did confirm it with multiple sources in the Canada camp, but now that he's come back to Toronto FC, I don't know if it's change of heart, change of thought, but pulling back the curtain, this is the first time I've actually told this story publicly. So I, just to be clear, we just want to make sure that we call Richie by his last name that he wants. We're fine either way, but it seems to be a little bit of a miscommunication here. But yeah, anything else to add to that? That's kind of it, right?
Maybe on the technical side, I thought he was outstanding against Nashville after coming back from Canada.
He played 90 minutes.
Where he gets all that energy from.
unbelievable. And honestly, Richie was incredible in that Canadian camp this time around at the Gold Cup. You're right. He plays, 100 minutes against Mexico in a hostile environment, in a game where you're expending everything that you have, and then comes back and plays a couple days later after travel, whatever, in Toronto and plays 96, 97 minutes against Nashville. The guy's an absolute beast. And I'll tell you what, like, for Canada, and there's those two Canadian players right across the middle of the park, Larea, Osorio with Eustachio, Kay, and Buchanan. Those five were unbelievable against Costa Rica and Mexico. I thought they were so good. I don't know what you want to add to that, but they were unbelievable.
Maybe just that John Herdman's going to have a headache picking 11 for September when you had Alphonso Davies back into the mix. Maybe Atiba coming over. It's good times for Canadian soccer. And I think Richie's a player that needs to be confident. I think he needs clarity when he's out there on the field. And I think he's getting that right now from Herdman and Javier Perez. I think he's just enjoying his football right now. And I think he's playing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to say, you know what, that player at the start of the year, that wasn't me, this is me. You know, I still have aspirations of getting to Europe at some point.
Yeah. This was a long way about going about saying that. I think that referees are going to be watching now because there certainly is contact and there's enough to give penalties, and it's difficult for defenders. Just the way that Richie plays in attacks, full credit to him. It's just unbelievable to watch. And the player just continues to diversify his game, which is great to see. Now, Soteldo stepped up and, you know, you might say, well, why didn't Altidore take it? Why didn't Soteldo made his last two penalties playing for Santos last fall. And Andre Blake is an excellent goalkeeper. I don't think Soteldo hit it all that poor. Blake went the right way, had to go down, fully extend, by the way, and came up with a great save. And after that, Terry, the game was done and dusted, really. That was your last hope. That was your last hope right there.
Yeah, I think so. I think Richie's got this knack for TFC where he's becoming a difference maker for us. His pace is important and creates that penalty or that moment almost out of nothing. Philly had kind of had a lot of numbers back in protecting their goal. I didn't think it was Soteldo's best game. He did okay, I thought, when he kind of dropped between the lines in the first half and found some space to help TFC progress up the field. But then again, we didn't have a whole bunch up the field. The best performances I've seen from him is when he's in a wider position. And The one thing I just say, the feeling I get in my gut, and there's not maybe a whole bunch of data behind this, is the player that steps up to take a penalty, maybe the one guiding principle I'd have is I want him to be having a good game. I want him to be in a positive frame of mind, not, oh, I need this penalty to dig me out. Oh, I need this goal. And I just didn't think it was his best half of football for TFC. And we can mitigate that with a system, quick turnover of games, starved of service. But yeah, I think at that moment, it really was game over. I think at 2-0, it was going to be difficult.
The only thing worse than that, Gareth Southgate putting on Rashford and Sancho without having touched the ball to take a penalty in the Euro final.
Everyone can't wait to jump on Southgate's back. Eh?
He's got a great name, that guy, Southgate. Great first name. But no, just, you don't put on a player just sitting on the bench for 120 minutes in an environment like that, say, go on and take your penalty now. It's just insane.
That's a lot of, not a lot of gut, a lot of analytical and data behind that decision.
Yes. You mentioned it. Perutza comes on. Good to see him play, have his second appearance in Major League Soccer, and welcome back Achara. I saw someone put out a tweet. Achara plays his first game since March 7th, 2020. I'm like, yeah, that was his only game he's ever played in Major League Soccer. It's not a player that's had this illustrious career. That was just his second game overall. And of course, you think about that night at BMO against New York, scored a goal on his debut. It was wonderful. But now he's played all of two games. It's been a long road back for him. It's a player that can play a lot of positions for Toronto FC. And I think it was more about just getting him out there, having a run. Curtis told me last week that he was close. I didn't think he was this close, Terry, to being ready, but that's great news, providing TFC another option up top, especially when, obviously they've lost Ayo Akinola for the year. Just gives him another young option with hopefully some legs. We'll see how he does. And he's going to have to be managed a little bit coming back from this serious injury, won't he?
Managed is a great word. And I think the context to bring him on was perfect. After a while, you almost become the forgotten man. And as a player, a couple of times I've been out for a long time, you kind of get, you're fighting and you're scrapping, and but you also, it's a tough headspace to be in, being out that long, because we're in this, like, as a player, your job's to go out on that field and perform or push others to be the best they can be. And you know, help make competition for places difficult, make players better in training. But when you're in the gym for so long, it's so tough mentally. And that first game and the build up to it will meant the world to him. I thought he was outstanding, as you said, against New York City FC. There was enough in that appearance where you're like, wow, this guy's a little bit different, and he's going to be huge for the squad. And then bang, you get injured. And you know, I think it was the build-up to MLS's back and training and the last inner squad before that. And fair play to him for knuckling down. Some of the skills he'll learn and over this time will set him up for life. Some of the resiliency he'll built up is huge. And I'm excited for him, and fair play to him. I think just kind of going back to what you said, managing him is important. I know he'll feel like he's got something to prove. And I don't think that's the mindset you want coming back from injury. I think you just ease your way back in, gradually build up your minutes.
Yeah.
Keep trusting in the process, even though you're almost there now.
It's a transfer deadline day in Major League Soccer. The window closed. We're not sure at the time of taping if anything will be done, but I'll say this. With Endo out for a little bit, out through injury, you just don't have that natural right-sided option if you're going to play with three up top. And Achara can be that. That's a little bit of a hole in the team right now. Delgado, that wasn't his position. Much better in the middle of the park. I think we've seen that in recent weeks. So there is a position to be gained there if you can show some form here. But again, it just needs to be done the right way. You can't just have him try to do too much too soon.
Yeah, for sure. And we've seen Javier Perez being a little bit flexible. And I think he, again, I'm speculating, but maybe his formation and his team to a degree fits against who we're playing against. And okay, this system's good against Nashville. This three against Philly should be good, and we keep that continuity as well. I think what'll be interesting for us, Wheels, is how do you fit Pozuelo back into the mix when he's fit? And then you've got almost three Mavericks in Altidore, Soteldo, and Pozuelo. And then if you want another attacking player out there as well, I think he has to have some bite. I think he's got to be able to press. I think we need energy, and probably someone that moves the ball quite quickly, because Soteldo loves the ball. Pozuelo loves a touch. Josie can take a touch into his feet. The word dynamic comes to mind, and energy would be kind of my guiding principles for that player if possible. I believe we're probably pretty tied up against the cap, so it might mean somebody leaving as well to bring somebody in.
Josie just didn't have the legs in Philly. I just don't think he's all the way back, Terry. And what you need is Altidore, the player that stormed off the bench and scored a goal in his first game back at BMO Field. That's the Josie that you need, full of life, full of energy. The guy that we've seen over the last couple of days is just not – it's not what you expect out of him. It's not up to the high level that he has set over the course of his career. Still just two goals on the season. And he needs to be that dominant force, especially when Pozuelo is out of the lineup. That is a big miss for Toronto FC. And I think that Altidore, to be honest with you, just coming back after being on the sidelines for what, 5-6 weeks, he needs to be managed as well. Just in terms of his overall fitness, in order to play him, put him in a position to succeed. I just don't think that he can go on and play 90 minutes or play from the start or play two games in 3-4 days at this point. Maybe as we get a little bit deeper into the season, the fitness builds back up, but I just don't think he's quite there yet.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, when we have SZ, and I feel like we've been saying this for three years now, he's unplayable. And I think that's the Josie we expect every time we turn the TV on to see. And maybe picking the moments where we can get a great 60 minutes out of him, or 30 minutes, rather than expecting 90, 90, 90, might lead to more output. I think that's what I heard from what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Wheels, I just say, like, when a new manager comes over, everything's new. It's easy for the player to say, yeah, that was on Armis. And you kind of band together, and there's this adrenaline that kind of gets you through the first five games. And then once that adrenaline starts to die down, I think this is the spot we're in right now. And we don't really have time to flatline right now. We need still to play with that urgency. And we, in the last 10 minutes, at home the other night against Nashville, it was like we almost settled for a point rather than going, okay, there's not much in it here, but we need 3 points in this moment, and continue to keep the fans off their seat and keep pushing. So it's finding that right balance of, okay, we'll take that point in Nashville. Let's still maybe pick a team with energy and have that urgency against Philly to go get after it. And I think that's what, maybe what's in Javier Perez's mind and what he expects to see against New York City on the weekend.
That was my feel about the Nashville game as well. Let's deal with that quickly. Then we'll go big picture again. A 1-1 draw on Sunday, where I felt like TFC weren't able to capitalize on that great start to the game again. It kind of fizzled out when the second half, other than the penalty shout that we already addressed right at the end of the game, Nashville were really the side on the ascendancy over the course of that second half, because TFC started the game really well. And that opening goal by Omar Gonzalez straight off the training pitch, that set piece, it was so good. Do you want to walk our listeners through it? What stood out to you and why you like that so much?
Yeah, it was... It was paradise. It was beautiful to watch.
paradise.
And we've not been spoiled with too many set pieces. Like, did I just see that? And then I was like, okay, this is going to go straight into the academy playbook. And there wasn't too many layers to execute. Bradley had it over his head, puts it down. It's a quick ball from Sauteldo. And what a tough header from Omar Gonzalez to kind of like reach back and almost like wiffle ball it with his head into the back of the net. It was, it was a special one. And it's what our performance deserved. I thought we were really dialed in. I thought Javier Perez learned from our playoff game against Nashville, where we weren't open in transition. When we lost the ball, the guys worked really hard to get numbers back behind the ball at the edge of our box. I thought it was always going to be a tight game, and who drew blood first was going to be important. And at 1-0 up, you're like, okay, we're in a good spot here, but this is a good Nashville side that don't give away much.
Yeah, we were buzzing, but then they came back into the game. Alistair Johnston, or boy, far post, Bono with a great save on a diving header. Then the flukiest of all fluke goals that have ever been fluked. long throw, Rory DeLapp style. If you watch a Canadian Premier League, there's this cat named Nico Pasquati that played in the first year. He has this long throw. He puts like a little bit of a spin on it, and it just kind of spins up and in. And it's just a goal that Alex will want back, and just the entire defense, because it's just awkward. You don't see goals scored directly from a throw in that manner, right? Like usually it's in the box, there's chaos, it bounces around, then bang, just kind of like slid in that near post.
Yeah, this, I agree with you. He didn't mean it, and it kind of just hits his head, and Castellanos, it's like, it's, oh dang, it's in the back of the net. And I think the pace of the long throw, and just kind of as it was dropping down, picked up some pace off his head, and I think it surprised Bono. And it doesn't, as you said, we all know he has a long throw. It'll been worked on in training. And it was a tough one to concede, especially just before halftime. And then when we needed to unlock Nashville in the second half, you're like, oh man, we could really use Pozuelo right now. But I thought big picture, it keeps a run going. I thought our system, our spacing was really good. It looked a little bit more economical, where at the end of the game, our guys weren't gassed. I thought there was clarity in our game plan, especially in defensive transition, to not give some of their key attackers space. I thought it was a good point that we could continue to build on.
Here's the big picture problem with all of this.
Okay, go on.
conceding goals. That's 13 consecutive games, Terry, without a clean sheet. If they're cheap, if they're well-worked, they're finding their way into the back of the net. This reminds me a lot before the season where, you know, Manning brought in the defensive reinforcements, like the first year of Giovinco and Altidore. Yeah, and then he understood that he needed to solidify that back line. The thing is, you have true pros. You've established very good players playing defensively in this team, unlike that TFC team in 2015. They've conceded 36 goals on the season. And yeah, you know, the 7 goals against DC United makes that stand out a little bit more, but no one else has conceded more than 29. And that's a big number regardless. When you haven't conceded or you haven't picked up a clean sheet in 13 games, that's problematic. The question is, what do you do about it? You know, is there something that you're seeing? Is it formation? Is it urgency? Is it individuals? Like, what is it? Because that's a statistic that you don't want up beside your team's name.
Yeah, and I think that was number one objective for Javier Perez to solve once he took over. And I think we have looked more solid other than Philly in transition, where we're getting numbers behind the ball. I think the extra center back has helped us. Unfortunately, there's been individual errors and lapses of concentration, which have cost us. And I think the quality of the league's getting better. I don't think there's any passes where you're like, okay, these guys are rubbish. We'll pick up points here, especially with so many games away from home. So I'd say we're on the right path. And it's finding the right balance of when all our superstars are back, how do you integrate them into the team yet keep that defensive solidity? And I think if we're going to climb that table, that has to be our springboard. And the other kind of thing I dive into a little bit, I want to keep the same 11. But I think freshness is important, especially when you're playing 3 games in a week, and maybe trusting, and I know it's tough, especially when your backs up are up against the wall, maybe some of our younger players like a Ralph Prizzo, who I thought was excellent again on Sunday night, to maybe go back to back and you know, maybe use one of our senior players in midfield for the last 30 minutes. Like when Osorio came on Sunday night, he really made a difference. But you kind of knew deep down he was going to come straight back into the 11.
It's very difficult, and you and I have been around here long enough to not go, you know, questioning every decision that's made in terms of naming an 11. We're not around training. We don't know how a player's training, what they may be dealing with. But I will say this. I would like to see some of those younger players in, because this is an older team. Like if you look at the team last night, there's a lot of experience. And this is a league that's getting younger and younger. And what those younger players do bring is they're bringing life and energy and legs to games. And when it's a congested schedule, I think you benefit by playing your younger players. And that would be the one thing that I say that TFC is missing a little bit, is when Prizo or a player like him is on the field, you notice it, Terry. Like, and I think it kind of lifts everyone around him as well. That's the one thing I would like to see. And I'm not saying just throw young players into games where, you know, there isn't a platform for them to succeed. But I do think doing it with purpose and maybe a little bit of projection would help this group.
Yeah, and then maybe keep a couple of your weapons and senior players in the back pocket, and you've got them to come on for the last 30 minutes. And then they're fresh for the next game as well. But I think big picture, Javier Perez has done a great job. Philly's a blip. Let's see how the guys react on Saturday against New York City.
Yeah, like I mentioned, the transfer window closes today. If there is a big signing, there is a big trade, apologies. I'm sure you'll get a reaction from somewhere at some time at New York City Saturday night. Another very good team. Before we get into what TFC needs to do, as we are at the midway mark of the season, your thoughts on New York City, Terry, and maybe some of the threats that they possess?
Yeah, I think... they're a team now that can hurt you really quickly. It's a little bit less methodical. I think when they smell blood, they come at you with numbers. And I think what that does is it opens up space as well. So I think you'll see two teams that are very comfortable in possession. I think you'll see both sides feel like 3 points are up for grabs. And on the day, I think whoever kind of executes in and around both boxes should be, we'll take the 3 points. I think you've got star power on show as well. I'd probably say there's a little bit less pressure on us, but the fact that we're playing at home will be a huge lift.
Before they went out, I believe they played to a 0-0 draw last time out. They smashed Orlando 5-0. They put 4 past Columbus. This is a team that might not have that one star player that jumps off the page, but Morales, Medina, Castellanos, like Tejuri, like
those are star power for me.
Well, for me, it's strength in numbers. You know, it's a little bit of a different profile of a player, but they've improved. And I didn't rate this team all that highly in recent years, but I rate this team. So it's going to be a difficult go for TFC on the weekend.
No, there's no holes in their 11. They're a little bit deeper as well. And I think you may bring up a great point too, that it's a little bit more of a collective approach. And there's buy-in from the entire squad rather than having maybe one or two that carry you.
So this is the difficult conversation to have. TFC in 13th place. Well, joint 12th, I guess, with Chicago. But lower than them based upon goal differential. Only Inter Miami's behind them. They're on 14 points through 17 games. To get into the playoffs this year, it's shrunk back down to 7 teams in the Eastern Conference. That means right now occupying that spot, well, 6 and 7, is DC United and Columbus, who are both on 24 points. So you're 10 points back of what you need to do is leapfrog or jump over 6 teams to get into that spot and make up that ground. For some context, playoff team, the 7th place team in 2019 had 45 points. meaning that Toronto FC would have to pick up 31 points out of an available 51 points over the course of these next 17 games. You know, there's lots of ways you can come to that equation, but basically 10 wins, one draw, six losses. And that's to get to 45, and there's no guarantee when you get to that number. So what do you make of TFC's playoff chances? Is the group really in a playoff chase right now? Or do you just need to go about your business, try to improve, and hope that you pick up enough points over the course of the way for that final six, seven game sprint where hopefully you are in the mix?
I love your macro look, and I think that that's important, and to know how you need to be tracking and what's needed to get there. I'd probably then chunk it into three parts. Okay, let's look at these next five games. And I think we play some good sides, teams all in the East. So New York City, then New England, both at home. Atlanta struggling a little bit. Inter Miami struggling a little bit. That'll be a fun trip for the boys. And then Montreal away. So I'd say there, in a perfect world, 10 points, I think you want from those five games. You'd take nine and then reassess, okay, where are we at? I think what's been important in Javier Perez's first six games is he's laid a foundation. I think there's clarity to our identity right now, and there'll always be little nuances to it. But now, let's get after picking up 9 points in the next five games at least.
Yeah, the problem is you're leaving six on the table. And if there is only that, that much of a room for error, then you can only drop 14 points through the remaining 12 games, right? Like, that's the thing here. The draws, the undefeated stretch was fine. You're right. It did, stop the rot. You do see progress. But right now for this season, you need to win. Like, I don't think that's enough. I think you need to go at least 12 points out of 15 here over the next five games. As difficult as that sounds.
And that's why you're the big dog, right? So,
well,
I think your goal has to be somewhat realistic, because if you go, okay, we're going to chunk it into these five games and you don't get there, now you're regrouping. I think you need to kind of be realistic coming out of these last six games and then really make a charge at the back end of the year. But you're right. Look, it gets real after the All-Star game. This is when MLS players get paid at the back end of summer. This is when you really do go to work in a playoff format.
Well, hopefully Pozuelo's back this weekend, because he is an NYCFC killer. You have NYC at home. You have New England at home the following weekend. Then you play three teams that are going to be in and around you and trying to make up that space for a playoff spot in Atlanta, Miami, and Montreal, all the way at home to finish off the August schedule. Those last three non-negotiable, you need to win. And you're playing two good teams at home. You need to pick up points there, Terry. So I think 10, 11, 12, you have to be around that number in order to make the games in September and October count. Just the way I look at it. No TFC players in the MLS All-Star game, so they can just sit, relax, recuperate. I don't think that's a bad thing on a year like this, although you want your players to be recognized for their accomplishments. But let's be honest, it's for a lot of reasons that have been well documented here. Just the season has been below standard, and I think that we all understand where the team is at right now. Anything else to add this week?
I'm a Buchanan fan. I'll be cheering for him at the All-Star game.
Tejan.
I'll live vicariously through him.
Well, as much as you enjoy him in Major League Soccer, he does play for another team, so we'll like him that much more when he makes the trip across the Atlantic and plays for a top European side, then comes back and plays at BMO Field for World Cup qualifiers. Really, how's that?
Do you really think Bruce Arena is going to let him go when they're at the top of the league?
It's tough, and I'll say this. You don't want to set a precedent of not letting young players go when there's clear and present interest, when that might be better for their career. It's a difficult one. I find that Borussia Dortmund's going through it a little bit now, stockpiling young talent, but when they want to go, there needs to be a proper understanding, because if there isn't, then you trump yourself for future, future young players coming into your club. So I think you got to be careful. I think you got to be careful with that one.
Yeah, I think each situation is different. I don't think you can set a precedent. I think you got to look at each player and situation. With this different set of eyes, I guess. I think you can find a way where everybody wins. And I think Tejon's done enough for his move. And maybe it's okay, you join the team in January. And the move gets done and you see out the season with New England.
I wouldn't mind the move getting done this week so we don't see him August 14th. As much as I'd love to see him play live again, I'd prefer New England without him in the team. Good stuff this week, Terry. Will I see you at BMO Field, 8 p.m. Saturday night?
Let's do it. Big Academy game, Unionville, 3 o'clock, and then over to BMO.
Beautiful. Field. Just don't be wearing that baby blue. Like, Jack Grealish, Man City, ooh, 100 million. Whatever. Not that I'm a bitter United supporter or anything like that. Good pickup by you, boys. On that, I want to leave on a high, though. Give me some good news.
You want some good news?
Yeah.
I'm excited for these next five games to see.
Let's see,
9+ points. We're moving in the right direction. We'll just push Philly to the side and give the guys a pass. But it's real. Let's get after it these next five games.
Good stuff. Thanks to our producer, Erica. And thanks to you for tuning in as well. Good Saturday night and a new fresh podcast coming your way next week. On behalf of Terry, the motorcycle bandit Dunfield, I am Wheels. Wheels up. This is being Come On Your Reds.